The Scientific Research Bureau and Institute of Sociology of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, as well as Social Sciences Academic Press, recently published the Blue Book of China's Society of the year 2018. The report pointed out that employment remains stable in China, with the total volume of urban employment reaching the new peak in the first three quarters of 2018. The average disposable personal income of Chinese residents also increased compared to that of the same period in 2017. I promise you, this is a new report that's fresh out of the oven, and there's a lot of numbers here. So we'll break it down and look at the situation here in China.
Yeah,
so,
true. If you want to know a larger picture of how Chinese economy is going, you certainly want to look at the employment figures, because I think earlier, just a few weeks ago, there was this economic conference held by the Chinese CPC Central Committee, and one of the goals it set out for 2019 was stability, and among that, stability of employment was the most important. And so now let's move on to the employment figures included in this blue book. According to this blue book, 11.07 million urban residents got newly employed in the first three quarters, achieving the yearly goal of 11 million in advance. And 1.36 million people with employment difficulties got jobs, 30,000 more than that in the same period 2017. And up until the end of September, the total number of urban employment reached 133 million people, over 9 million more than that by the end of 2017. In the meantime, unemployment rate drops. By the end of the third quarter, the registered urban unemployment rate was 3.82% in China, the lowest in recent years. The surveyed urban unemployment rate dropped from 5.1% this July to 4.9% this September. Among them, those aged between 25 and 59, who are the major employment force, remained between 4.3% and 4.4%, which was a relatively low level. So and this shows stableness, and that's according to Chen Guangjing, director of the Institute of Sociology of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. I think that's one of the institutions that conducted this survey and came out with this blue book. And he said the low unemployment of young laborers was a good news. He pointed out that in some countries where the unemployment rate of young laborers sometimes reached 40%, which was an important reason for an unstable society, the 4.3% and 4.4% in China served as a basis for a stable society in China. And also, meanwhile, this guy, Li Peiling, who's chief editor of the Blue Book, said the surging price level in China in 1988, the rising unemployment rate after the Asian financial crisis in 1998, and after the global financial crisis in 2008, also brought some social problems. The stable situation in 2018 was supported by the stable employment policies in China. Now, obviously, we get a larger picture about how the employment status is going on in this country. However, there's some information that's still, well, I wouldn't say missing, but still not necessarily included in this part. And I think, according to Chen Jingguang, who said in some parts of the country, the unemployment rate could be 40%. So bear in mind that the figures we are looking at, although very positive, very encouraging, are the national average. And although that shows how the general picture of the Chinese economy is going, is going stably, but there are some areas we need to put in more efforts to sort of help people have a better life and be able to support themselves. And one of the things that I would like to mention is actually the historical number of students taking the national examination for postgraduate studies. I think I don't remember the specific numbers, but I heard in the news that actually the number is historical. Mm-hmm. A lot more people are going to choose for further studies to increase their odds of finding a better job. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there are also news about policies being rolled out to encourage business owners to keep the employees employed. I mean, so for instance, there are cuts in unemployment insurance payments for entrepreneurs and also cuts in personal income taxes for business owners who don't lay off people. So those news reports combined will show that actually, although the general picture is that China's economy, or at least the employment rate, is stable, there are areas, there are industries where people are having a little problem and therefore need a little more assistance.
Yeah, certainly. I think there are some areas that, in terms of employment, that people are feeling some headwinds. And this is the part that I guess it's quite interesting to see what are the changes that are happening. And one thing that, Lai Ming, you mentioned about historic numbers of students going into postgraduate studies, I think I used to think this was maybe a Chinese cultural thing, but of course, I think it's combined with the economics too. And also sometimes it's sort of like a prospect of how easily can you get a job straight out of college. But when, I wouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people are doing this, then de facto, we see sort of a devaluing of diplomas in a way. When, let's say, everybody's got the master's degree, then for the undergraduate student, graduate, that person would possibly feel the pressure that you must upgrade your education diploma. Otherwise, it puts you in a kind of unfavorable situation. And it's not necessarily because you're not good enough, but it's just everybody else has beefed up their arsenal. And then you feel that maybe you need to change your strategy as well.
Well, I would think of this move as a progress, because nowadays we could tell that a lot of people can afford to spend two or three more years in school and not working, not getting paid. So I think and the more people who want to and who can afford to pursue further studies, well, the more developed, I would say, that a society is.
Well, that's true. That's also possibly meaning a more skilled labor.
Yeah, and I also see here that it's the unemployment rate is around 3.8%, which is very low. And I think I know as a foreigner living here in China that when I look for work here, it's not really an issue. And a lot of people that I know that are looking for work, it's just so much easier to find employment. And, you know, in the States, when I graduated from uni in 2007, that was actually probably the worst time to find work in the States in a long time. And
the financial crisis.
Yes. And I remember going around the state for months and months and not finding anything. So it was just, I guess this is just kind of my experience, you know, over the past, I guess, decade, you know, from living in the U.S. at that time. But from coming over to China, I found that it's different. It's like being in an employee market where actually there's a lot more jobs available than there are job seekers. So it's just, yeah, it's a different feel, and it's a really nice position to be in. And I would imagine for a lot of people going to school and, you know, graduating, they have that choice to make. And I think back home for a lot of students, you know, depending on which trade that you're in, you know, they may have this pressure to continue on and go to school. Because, I mean, I was a psych major, and, you know, back home, there's not really a lot of jobs available. If you just have your bachelor's in psych, you would have to go back to school and get your doctorate degree or your master's degree, as you mentioned before. But here it seems like, you know, there's a bit more options. And if you do decide you wanted to stop and go into the workforce, there's lots of jobs available. Or if you would like to continue on, it just seems like it's a really good opportunity.
Interesting, Tony, you mentioned the unemployment rate at 3.82%, but that's the figure for urban unemployment rate. That means the figure for urban areas. And I think really it's important that we paid attention to urban employment rate in the sense that, well, obviously we know that urban areas, they are much more productive than rural areas. Mm-hmm. And really it provides the driver for the economy to go forward. Mm-hmm. So we can't afford to take a dent or take a hit hit in the employment rate here, but also in the sense that we can't afford to have the other way around. If you have poor unemployment rates, poor employment status in urban areas, then we create patches or pockets of poverty in urban areas with higher living costs than rural areas, and with people having no means to fend for themselves, and that could be potentially hazardous for the society as a whole. I mean, one of the things that President Trump, or I would say President candidate, or I would say candidate Trump said that I remembered was that he said our inner city was a mess. So that sort of shows how important it is to make sure we have a stable employment rate in urban areas.
That's absolutely true. But one also kind of wonders, what about the rural situation? As well, China, like a lot of countries, is made up urban and rural, but in this report, I think rural seems to be a part that's not really being mentioned. And I suppose one reason is that if you have your own land and you're farming that land, then you're considered as self-employed in a way.
Yeah, go back to the piece of land that you have. I mean, there's always a means for you to stay fended, to say stay fed, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, really, as regard to migrant workers, there are moves that the Ministry of Public Security is doing, also at local offices or local departments, they are working to sort of make sure that migrant workers are being paid. I mean, there are a lot of labor disputes, and actually there's an increase of labor disputes this year. Mm. Data show that the number of labor dispute cases rose in 2018. There were 1.29 million cases dealt by labor dispute mediation and arbitration institutions around the nation in the first three quarters, increasing by 6.7 of that in the same period in 2017. And local human resources and social security departments sent 1,800 cases of refusing to pay labor remuneration to the public security organs in the first half of 2018, and almost 1,300 of which were put on record. And these local departments had helped 1.31 million laborers, mainly migrant workers, to get their wages in areas of 12.98 billion yuan in the first three quarters. That's a lot of money being owed to migrant workers, and a lot of money being returned, being paid back to them.
Yes, and that's certainly one area that we see sort of as a reoccurring topic year on year, that sometimes these migrant workers, they need, well, the legal weapons to be at their disposal to actually to help them get back what they deserve, that is their pay. And sometimes with these, especially in areas such as construction, because of the way that I suppose business is set up, and there's usually layers after layers after layers.
That's a long business cycle.
Mm. Yes, of hiring of different groups of people, and then those who are at the bottom of this very complicated recruitment and remuneration chain, they sometimes struggle to be paid, and that is a problem that. Well, yeah, in a way, then maybe seeing more labor disputes and them being solved can be seen as a slight progress, in the sense that at least these folks are getting their money back and they're finding a way to get their money back. And we're also seeing that in 2018, there's one term that you cannot escape from, that is trade frictions between China and the U.S. And I'm looking at the situation in terms of manufacturing here in China. How are folks doing in that regard?
Folks, manufacturing, obviously, we've been talking about industrial restructuring for a long time, and there is a mismatch here in the number of laborers who are willing to work in the industry and the number of people who want to recruit. And by the end of September, the ratio of employment among the primary, secondary, and tertiary industries was 27.4, 28, and 44.6. The percentage of the primary and secondary industries dropped dropped by 0.7 and 0.1% respectively compared to that in the same period in 2017. And within the tertiary industry, sectors that saw a higher increase in the number of employment, the information transmission, software and information technology service sector, the water conservancy, environment, public facility management sector, education, health and social work, culture, sports and entertainment sector. So according to this blog book, the ratio between the number demanded and the number of job seekers in the labor market was 1.25 in the third quarter, and it showed that the number of positions offered were more than the number of job seekers. So in some cases, in manufacturing jobs, maybe migrant workers, they are not getting the best employment opportunities. I think that's all the more reason why we should help them, providing training opportunities, providing education opportunities, mm-hmm. so they can be reintegrated into the employment, into the workforce.
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot happening that's in the manufacturing industry, and lots of jobs that are kind of in a shaky position right now. Well, we know that there has been this 3-month truce between the U.S. and China. Yeah, they're talking a lot of terms right now. So I think on March the 2nd, that's when we can get some new conclusions in that regard. So we'll be watching closely. And as the employment situation remains stable and economy grows, it seems like the residential income has also been seeing an uptick. What are the figures saying there?
Well, the average disposable personal income of Chinese residents reached 21,035 yuan in the first three quarters, an increase by 8.8% compared to that in the same period in 2017. And if considering the rising price factor, the actual increase rate was 6.6%. Also, the average disposable income, personal income of Chinese urban residents was 29,599 yuan, increasing by 7.9% compared to that in the same period in 2017. And the figure for rural residents were 10,645 yuan and 8.9%. So here, we also see a discrepancy here. We see urban areas, residents are getting paid much more than people in rural areas. And I see there's tremendous potential in rural areas if we, say, could develop a second or third tier, or even smaller townships to provide job opportunities to make sure that people are employed and get paid. Then we could totally see this transition from an export-oriented market to one that is dependent on internal consumption.
Mm. Hey, Lai Ming, you mentioned that, you know, since the disposable income is rising, that perhaps people have a little bit more money to spend, and I'm thinking maybe in some of the rural areas that perhaps people are investing their money more in, say, education, and maybe perhaps a lot of the young people growing up may want to go to school and get degrees and may not, perhaps maybe this might have some influence on the manufacturing industry. Do you think that perhaps maybe people are not wanting to work in these fields and perhaps just want to go to school and, you know, have more options?
I'm not sure about the general picture, but my impression is that education is a costly business. It not only just relies on the input of parents, of individual families, but also depends on the input of the national economy, of the national treasury as a whole. And there are some figures in this blue book too, and the total educational expenditure was 4.25 trillion yuan in 2017, increasing by 9.43% than the year before. And among this, the national physical educational expenditure was 3.42 trillion yuan, increasing by 8.94% than the year before. It took up 4.14% of the gross domestic product. The figure remained over 4% for 6 consecutive years. Half of the expenditure was used in the compulsory sector, and half was used in the middle and western part of the country. And actually, the report does mention that we have been able to maintain like a 5%, more than 5% input of the domestic, gross domestic product into education. But the truth is, we have been talking about guaranteeing 4% input in the sector for many years. And it's only in the past 6 years that the government has been able to do that consistently. And this sort of highlights the fact that actually, in many parts of the country, and especially rural areas, I've actually paid a visit to Guizhou, which is a very remote part of the country and the frontier, actually, a mountainous area. And I'll be able to see. I certainly haven't paid a visit to the schools, but I realized the infrastructure there was not exactly on par with that in urban areas like Beijing and Shanghai. So in many parts of the country, a lot of the young people, the employable young people, they're not actually staying in the same city that they were born into. They are out, for instance, in Chengdu, in Xi'an, I suppose. That's the big cities near Guizhou province. Mm. They're looking for job opportunities there. And so I'm not sure how education resources is going to be very well utilized, because a lot of the young people, when they travel to big cities, when they get married, when they settle down, they will have their kids in big cities.
Yeah.
Sometimes due to local hukou policies or education policies, their kids cannot attend schools in where they're working, then they have to stay at home and receive education. A lot of it really depends on how rich the local government is and how rich the local industries is, because that way, that's the only way to ensure there's enough supply of funding in the local government's treasury. And then in that sense, I'm not sure in rural areas, I am sure that in rural areas, a lot more input should be directed to make sure that their kids grow up better educated and better adaptable to the society where we are seeing AI technology going to take place.
Yeah,
so
that's a really good point, because we are looking at a fast-changing job market, and also the job, what's asked of in terms of skill set, it's changing so quickly these days. And with this blue book, it also looked at a new generation of digital natives. So how young are these kids as they are, well, getting in contact with the internet for the first time?
Very interesting question. The survey showed that 10.88% of teenagers contacted with the internet since they were 5 or younger.
Wow.
And 61.43% started to contact with the internet since they were 6 to 10 years old. And only 27.69% started to use the internet after they were 10. Oh, I don't know. I started using a computer at the age of 15, I think. So a lot of the young kids nowadays, they are getting a head start as we speak.
That's a really good point. And I didn't actually start, I didn't touch a computer till I was about 12 or 13 years old. So and I feel like, you know, computers are, you know, there's a few things that bother me about computers. And I feel like with children, I don't want to give them too much exposure, but I feel like nowadays it's actually important, especially with all the industries that are popping up from it.
But we are migrants to the age of information technology. Our kids, they are the aboriginals, I would say. Mm. So they will be more at ease with a computer or a tablet at hand.
Yeah, and they're also getting exposed to abusive information on the internet a lot younger too, and that's one takeaway from this summary of things that happened in China in 2018. You're listening to Roundtable.